Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to Gland Pharma Q2 FY22 earnings conference call. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star then zero on your touch-tone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Sumanta Bajpayee from Gland Pharma. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Thank you, Mavi. Good evening, everyone, and warm welcome to Gland Pharma's earnings conference call for second quarter of financial year 2021-22. I have with me Mr. Srinivas Sadu, Managing Director and Chief Executive Officer, Mr. Ravi Mitra, our Chief Financial Officer, to discuss the business performance and to answer queries during the call. We will begin the call with opening remarks from management, followed by Q&A session. Before we proceed with the call, please note some of the statements made in today's discussion may be forward-looking, and this must be viewed in conjunction with the risks and uncertainties involved in our business. The safe harbor language contained in our press release also pertains to this conference call. This call is being recorded, and the playback shall be made available on our website shortly after the call. The transcript of this call will be submitted to the stock exchanges and made available on our website as well. I will now hand over the call to Mr. Sadu for his opening remarks. Thank you, and over to you, Mr. Sadu.
Thank you, Sumanta. Good evening, everyone. Welcome to our earnings call for second quarter of fiscal 2022. Wishing you and your family good health. After nearly 18 months, life finally seems to be getting back to normalcy. We had stable manpower availability during the quarter. Some of our equipment vendors were able to travel into the country, and that helped us complete the installation of new lines. Our capacity expansion is coming along in a timely manner to support our future growth. The surge in consumer demand across industries was unanticipated and resulted in shortage of power in certain sections. While we saw power shortage resulting in power cuts in China, in India, the supply of power remained relatively stable, but the industry saw a rise in prices of power and transportation. We may face delay in supply of certain raw materials from China if there remains a prolonged shortage of power. However, we maintain sufficient level of inventory of raw materials. On the R&D front as well, we made good progress as we completed planned submission batches for complex injectables to be filed in this financial year. We are on track to make four complex injectable filings in this financial year. The other development projects are also running in line with the plan. We delivered a strong performance this quarter, Q2 FY22, with a revenue of rupees 10,805 million. That is an year-on-year revenue growth of 30% for the quarter Q2 FY22, resulting in also a growth of 30% for the six-month period, first half of FY22 over H1 FY21. With a PAT of 3,021 million rupees, we saw a year-on-year PAT growth of 38% for the quarter Q2 FY22, resulting in also a growth of 23% for the six-month period of H1 FY22 over H1 FY21. We have generated rupees 2,355 million of cash flow from operations for the six months FY22, despite external stress on supply chain. We continue to focus on revenue diversification across geographies, which is helping us further improve our manufacturing efficiencies because of benefits from scale as well as de-risking the business. We are ensuring that we absorb any declining gross margins by benefits from scale on the operations front, thereby maintaining healthy profitability. We have entered into technology transfer agreement for Sputnik Light as well and also completed three submission batches. For Sputnik V, we have completed submission batches for the first component, AD26, and technical batches for the second component, AD5, with improved yields. As soon as manufacturing license is received and export restrictions are removed, we will initiate manufacturing. We opened our new R&D center and expanded our R&D team, having capabilities in development of complex APIs. Our R&D expenditure for Q2 FY22 was rupees 578 million, which is nearly 5.3% of our revenue from operations. Upon excluding capital R&D expenditure, the R&D expenditure stands at 3.3% of our revenue for the quarter, which is in line with our historical trend. As on 30th September 2021, We, along with our partners, have 291 ANDA filings in the US and 1,518 product registrations globally. Let me take you through the business highlights across various geographies. Our rest of the world markets business continued to show strong demand for our core portfolio. This business accounted for 21% of our Q2 FY22 revenue, as against 18% of our Q2 FY21 revenue. We have seen 15% growth in revenues for the quarter. This has been driven by new product registrations and increased penetration of existing portfolio, especially from markets such as Brazil, Saudi Arabia, and Thailand. Our existing portfolio is seeing strong demand from new partnerships entered into during the year. Our key markets, namely US, Canada, Europe, and Australia, accounted for 62% of our revenue during Q2 FY22, as against 64% during Q2 FY21. We have seen 25% year-on-year growth in revenues for the quarter, which is a function of both healthy rate of new launches and volume growth in core portfolio. On including India sales for our core markets, the year-on-year growth is at 27%. With declining COVID-19 hospitalizations, we observed a shift in product mix. Our wide therapeutic portfolio helped us to sustain growth despite changing market demand. Our rich R&D pipeline is helping us maintain strong momentum of new product launches. We launched 12 molecules during the last quarter. We filed 5 ANDAs and received 5 ANDA approvals during the quarter. We also filed 3 DMFs during the same period. India market accounts for 17% of our Q2 FY22 revenue, out of which 9% accounts for domestic market sales and 8% accounts for Indian sales for export markets. We have seen 19% year-on-year growth in revenues for the quarter on account of volume growth of existing products like enoxaparin sodium and heparin sodium injection. With COVID hospitalizations coming down, demand for our regular critical care products is on the rise. While its portfolio has not gone back to the pre-COVID levels, but it's looking positive. Our near-term focus remains on establishing a strong portfolio of complex injectables, for which, while we are having an internal program, we are also looking at acquisition opportunities to help expedite the development process. Installation of new lines, catering to suspensions and hormonal products has been completed. Biosimilar CDMO is the next long-term growth driver we are working towards. While our experience with vaccine collaboration has helped us gain the know-how and accelerated creating facility and technical team, we are also looking at opportunities to collaborate on the biosimilar front to build a pathway to cement our position in the future. On the quality and regulatory front, all our plans continue to remain approved by US FDA. Our customers are conducting audits regularly and our team continues to remain prepared for any audit. We strive to continue delivering strong results for all our stakeholders. I once again wish everyone good health. I now hand over the call to our CFO, Mr. Ravi Mitra, who will share some more insights about our financial performance for the quarter. And thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Saru. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you very much for attending our second quarter earnings call. Our earnings presentation has been submitted to the stock exchanges and is also available on our website. Let me begin with sharing the financial performance of second quarter and first half of financial year 21-22. Revenue from operations for the Q2 FY22 stood at rupees 10,805 million, a year-on-year increase of 30%. We achieved robust growth across all markets, with our core market US, Canada, Europe, and Australia registering 25% year-on-year growth, and ROW market continued to demonstrate a healthy 59% growth. The growth in revenue was driven by a mix of new products and growth in existing products. Revenue from operations for the first 6 months of fiscal 22 stood at rupees 22,344 million, a year-on-year increase of 30%. Other income for the second quarter was rupees 512 million, which includes interest on fixed deposit of rupees 352 million and foreign exchange gains on operations of rupees 158 million. For the H1 FY22, the other income was rupees 1,130 million, of which interest on fixed deposit was rupees 691 million and foreign exchange gains on operation of rupees 435 million. We have reported an EBITDA of rupees 4,278 million in Q2 FY22 compared to rupees 3,181 million which is an increase of 35% compared to same period last financial year. EBITDA margin for Q2 FY22 stood at 38% as compared to 37% for the same period of previous financial year. We have managed to improve the EBITDA margin in spite of increasing operating expenses such as power and logistics, primarily due to higher operating leverage achieved on increased capacity utilization. EBITDA for the 6 months ended September 2021 was ₹9,259 million, compared to ₹7,628 million for the same period last year, a growth of 21%. We have reported EBITDA margin for H1 FY22 at 39%. Our net profit for second quarter was ₹3,021 million, a growth of 38% compared to Q2 FY21. During the quarter, we have recorded PAT margin of 27%, which is an improvement of 100 bps compared to same quarter previous financial year. During the 6 month period of the current financial year, our PAT was ₹6,527 million, which is an increase of 23% as compared to last year. To further expand R&D capabilities, we have commissioned our new R&D facility during this quarter, which is located at Pashim 11. The total R&D expenses for second quarter were ₹578 million, including the cost of this new R&D center of ₹211 million, and stands at 5.3% of revenue. Excluding this cost of new R&D center, our R&D expense remains at 3.3%, which is in line with our plan. The total R&D expense for the 6 month period were ₹1,015 million, compared to ₹482 million during the same period of the previous financial year. Our effective tax rate remains at about 25% in second quarter and for the first half of the current fiscal year. Cash flow from operation during 6 month period was ₹2,355 million. Cash flow from operation has come down during this period due to higher receivable and inventory levels. Working capital increased and stood at ₹20,334 million as on 30th September 2021, as compared to ₹16,054 million as on 31st March 2021, driven by growth in our business. Average cash conversion cycle stood at 198 days for the 6 months ending September 21, as compared to 180 days of same period last financial year. We have maintained similar range for receivable and payable days compared to previous year, but due to increased inventory, our overall cash conversion cycle has increased. All our planned CapEx plans are progressing well. Total CapEx incurred during 6 months of 2021 was ₹3,286 million, used for increasing capacity at our Pashim 11 and Vizag API facility, our new R&D center at Pashim 11, our biosimilar and vaccine manufacturing facilities in Hyderabad, and for routine maintenance CapEx. Our ROCE on ex-cash basis was at 35% on an annualized basis for the 6 month period of this fiscal year. Our fixed assets turnover stood at 3.4 times for H1 FY22, increased from 3.0 times for the same period last full year due to increased capacity utilization. As on September 2021, we had total ₹29,822 million of cash, which we intend to utilize for the CapEx plan and to fund our inorganic growth strategies. With this, I would request the moderator to open the lines for questions. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on the touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking a question. Anyone who would like to ask a question, please press star and one at this time. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. Question is from the line of Kunal from MT Global. Please go ahead.
Good evening. Thank you for the opportunity. So my first question is on the profit share components. So we are aware that it was somewhere around 8% in FY21. But can you provide some more details in terms of how historically that segment has moved for us for the last 3 to 4 years? So our profit share component was around 8% of revenue in FY21. But historically, let's say in FY19, FY20, how that has moved? What was the proportion?
Yeah, it's within the range of 8 to 10%, I would say.
Okay. Historically.
It all depends on how many products gets launched in that particular year, normally, and how many are new products which are launched in a certain space. But it normally falls between 8 to 10%.
Sure. And is it fair to assume that majority of that gets generated from U.S. and North America?
That's correct.
Sure. And the last one on that. So, as you alluded that, 8 to 10% is kind of fluctuates with the new product launches. So, is it again fair to assume that, generally a good portion of that 8 to 10% comes from the new product launches?
No, even for the new old products also, the profit share component is always there, right? So, for the older products, the profit share might go down over the years because of the, once the product gets more competition and genericized. But it kind of gets covered by the new launches what we do, where the profit share component is normally high.
Sure. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Shrey Jain from Iroha Investment Management. Please go ahead.
Good evening. Thank you for the opportunity. And congratulations to the management for a great set of numbers. I had two questions. The first one was, I wanted to understand, the ROW market has been growing fantastically for the company. I just wanted to hear from you on what is your, steady state view in terms of geographical spread. So earlier we had started with about 65-70% of US, now we are about 54%. Likewise for ROW, we were somewhere in the range of 16-20%, now we are over 30%. So how do you see that in the next 2-3 years going forward?
Because of the lower base, you are seeing, I think, the growth rates on a higher percentage. But overall basis, still our core markets is contributing about 61%. The ROW is contributing about 21%, which is higher than 18% for the last, if you only compare to the last quarter of the last year. So overall, I think it will stabilize over a certain period of time once the base hits normalcy. The reason why it's growing faster is, of course, historically, we didn't have enough capacities to cater to other markets. While we have registrations across the globe, we are focusing more our capacities to the U.S. market and the regulated markets. Now, with the new facilities adding up and new lines coming online, we are also expanding our portfolio to other markets. So while we are leveraging the old registrations, we are also, the products what we are registering in U.S., the newer ones have great opportunities in other markets where the margin profile is a little better than the older products. And that's one of the reasons why also it's helping the products to grow in the other markets.
But so it's fair to assume that this 59% kind of ROW growth will not continue over a period of time. Any particular range where, this would end up stabilizing at?
So still, the total as a company revenue, we're looking at ROW to stabilize around 40%. We're still at 21%, right? So still a long way to go. At what it depends on how many products we are able to move from the U.S., what are getting registered there. But I think our own internally, we are looking at next 4-5 years, we should get to the level where it should reach 35-40%. So the growth might vary from a quarter to quarter depending on the approvals of certain products in those markets.
Got it. That's clear. My second question was on the movement in working capital. I saw that there was some increase in trade receivable. Is that just a period end adjustment, or is there, if you could give us any color, because last year I think the number was around 46 crores. Now it's around 375 crores.
Yeah, it's more to do with the timing of the sales, I would say. If you see the preliminary part of this quarter, the logistics were a little difficult. So the sales happened in the second half of the, most of the sales happened in the second half of the quarter. One was the availability of the containers and crunch on that side. Also, it was more expensive, so we were waiting for that to let it settle down from the pricing perspective so that it not impact the margins. So most of the receivables are not due yet, but it will stabilize, I think, next quarter because of the delay, I think the late sales that happened, we are seeing this.
Got it. Thank you, sir, and all the very best.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Tarun Agrawal from Old Bridge Capital. Please go ahead.
Hello, sir. Good evening. Just wanted to check, sir, is there an element of seasonality in your core markets business?
Not much, I would say. Of course, you know, it depends on the portfolio we have. If it's concentrated on a certain set of portfolio, you will see the seasonality. But we have a breadth of portfolio. So while some of the products sell more during October to December, this time frame may be more effective. But otherwise, it's spread across the year.
Because I was just wondering, you know, on a sequential basis, the sales in the core markets have been softer. And I noticed this in the last Q1 to Q2 last year as well.
So, I mean, if you see the larger products in anti-infectious, right, like, you know, whether it's mycofungin or daptomycin, these are the larger products compared to the other products. And this adds larger revenue to the revenue percentage. That's why you see this. So few products are adding to that that number increase. But otherwise, overall, it's okay. But I think some of the products which are contributing more, sales more during October, December, and January to March, that connection. That's why you see that bump a little bit.
Got it. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Achal Pade from Investec India. Please go ahead.
Hi, sir. Thank you for the opportunity. My question was on the complex injectable portfolio. So as it is an area of focus for us, so would want to understand more on what sort of complexity are we talking of here? Like, is going to be the target? Is it going to be the complex API or the formulation or the complexity around the device? So if you can give some color on this.
If you look at the total basket, you know, the complexity varies from product to product. Some products, the APIs are different, some are formulations. So it's a complex, and some are like dosage form itself, and some are need a clinical. So it's a combination of everything. So if you look at our 17 products which we have taken in the first phase, I would say, you know, it falls into 3 or 4 different categories. What we have filed now is complex in APIs and also in characterization. And there are products in suspension mode where we also need a bio study. So it's not like one product, you know, one complexity for all the products, but it's a mix of everything.
Okay. So I'm just to follow up on this, is it time bound? Like, is the strategy more about time to market here, or would we be second, third, fourth player here, but given the shortage or we are planning to trump on the costing side, what would be the strategy here behind the complex portfolio?
I'm sorry, could you repeat that? There's a lot of disturbance.
So, like, as other companies are also targeting some of these complex products, wanted to understand, is time to market or strategy here, or would cost or cost would be a focus here, being the low-cost manufacturer and gaining market share?
Of course, you know, it all depends on the capabilities what every company is looking at. You know, while one is, of course, you know, there's also complexity in manufacturing. There's a complexity in development. And the cost as well. So we're also working on internally on certain APIs which are complex. So that kind of gives you an advantage. And you're creating an infrastructure, and these are the products where not too much volumes you could see. So not everybody will go and put up a plant to do this. Since we are in a CDMO space and we are a B2B business, we are investing into that. So this also adds up more business from other partners who are only developing products, but going outside to get that manufacturing done. So
So this is just not for our own products, but by creating the infrastructure to develop our own products, we're also creating the space for other companies to leverage our capabilities to develop and launch their products.
Okay, so and one last on the ROW market. So we have expanded our footprint into 2-3 new markets, which has driven growth. So are we looking to target more newer markets, or the growth for the next couple of years is to come from deeper penetration into the existing markets?
It's a combination of both. Now that we got entry into these markets, we'll expand our portfolio more into this, like we have done historically. Some of the markets were very strong. We started off with 3 or 4 products, but you see 15 products selling in some of these markets. So the same strategy will adopt, because once you get your plant approved by certain regulatory agencies from a country, it's all the more easy to get more products into that country. So, and then we're also looking at getting into countries like Mexico, where there's certain products where there's a lot of opportunity left. So we see there's opportunity in other markets also, but we are identifying those markets as well.
So would these be equally competitive as U.S. market is, or could you give some comparison in pricing competition compared to the U.S. market for these bunch of ROW markets?
So if you see, most of the products what we are selling in other markets, products which have lesser competition and lesser players, which are a little bit more complex than other products, that's where we are focusing on in ROW market, so that, you know, we are not compromising with the margins.
Okay, sir. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Nithya Balasubramanian from Bernstein Research. Please go ahead.
Thank you. So first question is on Sputnik. So did we hear you say that both for AD26 and for AD5, you've actually reached validation scale?
That's correct, yes.
What would be the steps from here to commercializing the product?
So initial idea is to do focus on Sputnik Light. That's where the demand is coming now, especially outside India. So first few months, we're trying to manufacture Sputnik Light, and post that, we'll shift to this Sputnik V. But the two limitations, one is, of course, the export embargo still existing, but they are giving special permission for NOCs once you apply. One of the companies received it. But they're also challenging on the regulatory front. Still, Sputnik Light is not approved in India. Dr. Reddy is doing clinical trial now, and they're expected to finish off by this month end. So hopefully by November, both in terms of export embargo and clearance on the licensing side should be cleared. So we are estimating November as the month which might give clearance for export. That's when we'll start manufacturing.
Understood. So if Sputnik Light is what you're going to manufacture first, does the deal still remain the 250 million doses, or are you likely to go beyond that?
No, the deal still is a combination of Sputnik V and Sputnik Light, the number of doses.
Understood. The second one is on the biosimilar or the biologic CDMO opportunity that you were talking about. What sort of capacities do you have in mind? What kind of capacities are you going to create? And if you can tell us a little bit about what do you think is Gland's right to win in this segment?
As of now, we are creating capacity of 50 KL capacity has been created at the substance site, which we have actually created for the vaccine, and then it's getting expanded to the CDMO for the biosimilar space. And that we'll start with. And while we are discussing with companies, and it has enough, the size of the plant is enough. If we need, we can actually expand more. But that's where we're going to start with. And from the deal perspective, we are talking to companies within the Fosun framework. Trying to start up with them to initially launch some of their substances from the Indian side. And then in parallel work with other players. Because more and more we are seeing there's interest coming from a lot of generic as well as innovator companies trying to create a portfolio and extending the bias in the portfolio and trying to get into companies like us. For the clinical batches, for the trial batches, and ultimately leading to the commercial batches.
Got it. Is there a kiloliter or a liter number that you can share in terms of capacities?
So the capacity what we're creating is about 60 KL, that's what we said. Is that the question? Okay.
Yeah, you know, that's helpful. So I was wondering if there are plans to expand it, but that's where, I'm assuming that's where you start and then see, then expand later. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you so much. All the best.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Tushar Manudani from Motilal Oswal Financial Services. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for the opportunity. So on the core market side, for the past 6 months, you have launched almost 24 molecules. But on the quarter-on-quarter basis, we do see some reduction in the sales. So if you could throw some light there.
So it all depends on the size of the molecules what you have launched. See, if you see last year, the big product got launched. So you're comparing with, you know, product like micafungin and daptomycin with the big products, which is one of the leading products for us. We got launched that last year and previous to that. So you're comparing with those where the products what we launched now are the smaller versions. That's one. Second, we can't really go with, you know, last this 21 and now because of complete different way the portfolio has worked. So once the complete shift happens, still 100% the post-COVID, I don't think has happened 100%, the shift to the therapeutic portfolio. So once that happens, then we'll see a difference in terms of the revenue breakup between the molecules.
So you're still seeing some traction on account of COVID, which probably may, assuming that now that the cases reduces, so it would die down in the coming quarter?
Yeah, we're already seeing that. It's moving, you know, next quarter. We're seeing actually most of the products which we're selling pre-COVID are coming back. And the COVID-related drugs, which we sold solely in the first quarter, especially in the rest of the world market, it's not coming out. Also in the U.S., it's gone away. So I would say we are at 70% level in terms of most of the portfolio. Currently, what we're seeing the coming quarter as compared to the last few quarters.
So just secondly on this, any update on USFDA inspection, given that, you know, we do have good number of products in the pipeline which are under shortage, so that kind of should have triggered USFDA inspection.
We have not heard anything from them yet. Our inspection was in September of 19. What we are seeing, they are visiting the sites. What we also hear is they are visiting sites where they have earlier issues or under warning letter or in sites where they have a PAI. So since our sites are already approved and most of the lines are already approved, maybe we have not heard from them, but you know, it's part of life, right? I mean, so as being a FDA approved plant. So we're geared up for that, and whenever we hear, you know, we have to face it.
But, and just lastly, if you could just explain this R&D capitalization for the quarter.
Yeah, so just to clarify, Tushar, that we don't capitalize any revenue expense. In this quarter, we have opened a new R&D center. And post-commissioning with the building and the equipment, everything which was sitting in CWIP has now moved into fixed assets. And that is the amount, 211 million. But other than that, our R&D expense on the revenue is similar to what our plan in earlier quarters, which is around 3.5 to 4%.
Got it. So this again, so which effectively means this is more also kind of a one-time impact.
Yeah, this is one-time. Once the now the equipment and R&D building, the new center has been capitalized, so it will not be again coming.
Got it. Thank you. That's it.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Fiona Chan from Veena Vista Fund Management. Please go ahead.
Hello, good evening. Thank you for the opportunity. My first question is, I think last quarter you mentioned many of your U.S. customers were facing high inventory levels due to stockpiling and lower elective procedures. I wanted to check, how are your customers' inventory levels now? And have there been changes in customer ordering patterns since COVID? Thank you.
Yes, we are seeing that, and in fact, some of the products are getting into drugs of the situation where we did hear from FDA on certain products, and also some customers coming out with some emergency orders because whatever stockpiling happened in U.S., one either sold off or got into that expiry mode. So there is a shift, and there is a change in the way the ordering is happening now. Compared to last quarter.
I see. And would that translate into lower margins for you due to emergency shipping and higher logistics costs?
No, not really, because the logistic costs are only you could see last quarter also the costs are on a higher side, on the logistics side. So it's already inbuilt in the product supply.
I see. And earlier you mentioned there were some logistics issues and delays. Are these related to shipping to the U.S. or are they also related to sourcing from China?
Mostly shipping out, especially the initial part of this quarter. Now it's kind of stabilized. I think I would say July-August time frame, there was availability of containers was a problem, but it got resolved, I think, later part of August.
I see. And to follow up earlier on the Sputnik vaccine, so am I correct in understanding that the production of Sputnik Light also satisfies your requirements with the RFID on the take-or-pay contract? So you could produce either one and you would satisfy the terms?
Yeah, the quantity what we have agreed with them includes this as well.
Okay. Do you have any updates on opportunities in China?
So we have filed one more product this quarter. So 7 products have been filed now, and hopefully we're estimating approvals, 1 or 2 products either this quarter or the first quarter of next year.
Okay, wonderful. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Anil Chalke from Haitong Securities. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Thank you for taking my question. Sir, I wanted to know some clarity on the margins going ahead. What would be the trajectory and what would be the key drivers that will help margins to either move up or if it is expected to remain at similar levels going ahead? And the second question I have is the competitive intensity in the injectable space is likely to go up considering a lot of Indian players are entering in this market. So how do we plan to protect our existing business from such competition? Are we looking to do more long-term tie-ups with hospital, et cetera, or the backward integration is the key? Thanks.
So I think, one is on the competition side. We always see that and that's as an advantage for us because we can actually license our products to the new companies as well. So any company who are entering, they not have a larger portfolio like what we have. And being a B2B player, every new player coming there actually creates one more opportunity for us to license products to them. So unlike a front-end player, being our model is a little different. It kind of helps us in spreading our portfolio across more companies. And in terms of margins, we still estimate to be around 37-38% of EBITDA. I think we'll be able to manage that. In spite of the logistic cost increase and the power and other expenses increase, we're still able to absorb those costs because of the operational leverage we had selling more units. And, if you look at our business model itself, it's spread across different models, right? Whether it is licensing of products, whether we are doing a tech transfer from other companies to us, or whether doing a contract manufacturing. So, and aggressively every quarter. So while there could be a pressure on margin, which as a B2B company, we absorb little pressure on that because it is mostly taken by our front-end partners. But whatever number it hits us, we are able to compensate that by doing more volumes because we supply products to different partners across the globe.
Sure. Thank you so much for taking my question. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Sonal Gupta from L&T Mutual Fund. Please go ahead.
No, thanks for taking my question and good evening, everyone.
Yeah, so just on India, I just wanted to understand that is this the quarterly run rate that we've done this quarter, does that still have some contribution from COVID or do we see this as a sort of a sustainable run rate?
No, there's no COVID sale at all in Indian business. If you see our Indian business, right, it's a combination of our own sale to the content business in India. And it also has a component what goes to the U.S. through Indian partners. So if you specifically look at the Indian business, what we're selling in Indian market, it kind of settled down to the previous growth rates.
Got it. So ideally, you're saying that the 8%, I think, should be actually counted as a part of U.S. sales, right?
That's correct.
Okay. And just be, again, on ROW, I mean, like there was, you did mention last call also there's some contribution from COVID-related products as well. But we're seeing that the sales are sustaining at that level. So should we assume that this is sort of that COVID should not really negatively impact this going forward?
No, even other markets, like I said, while during COVID, we started supplying some COVID-related products. The ministries are actually opened our product portfolio. They registered other products as well. And actually, we started supplying other products which are sold in normal course of time. So in that way, it also helped us to pushing some of our products into the markets where we never sold any products.
Got it. And just on, like the last quarter you mentioned about enoxaparin contracts in the U.S., so have those started and have those ramped up in this quarter or do you see further ramp-up?
You'll be seeing from October to December, the major ramp-up happening from the next quarter.
So this quarter, it's not been, that meaningful? I mean, just trying to understand.
No, not that meaningful.
Okay. And just lastly, I mean, your comment on gross margin, I mean, like you mentioned that you're offsetting it with operating leverage, but just trying to understand, so this gross margin pressure is, and the raw material cost pressure is more a function of product mix or it's, across markets, or is it a function of increased raw material cost or, I mean, like, just trying to understand what is the reason for gross margins, I mean, the raw material cost going up further.
So our gross margin concept is a little different than other companies, right? Because if you see our gross margin, it's a combination of our own product sales, the combination of contract manufacturing, and the combination of the tech transfer. And if you see my gross margin on a quarterly basis, it changes depending on the mix I sell. If I sell more of contract manufacturing, if I do more of contract manufacturing business, it's 100% gross margin because we don't build the materials. So if I do more of that, then suddenly my gross margin looks very high. And my tech transfer again, you know, some are pass-through and some are not pass-through. So it all depends on the mix of that and also mix of markets I sell to products. So it's not a like-to-like situation like other companies where they sell their own product directly in the market where the gross margin is, you know, excluding the materials. For us, because of our business model, it's not a right indicator of the price pressure and the cost involved in it. But there is an increase in logistic cost.
they contribute, and now I'm talking about the EBITDA level, probably around 1%, that will be better off if the logistic cost was not as high as it was in the last quarter. So there was an impact of 1% at the EBITDA level because of the logistic cost. But for the input materials, we didn't see much difference. If you look at some of our purchases, especially from the API front, only 30% of our materials are imported, 30-40%. And there's no big difference on the cost of those materials. So from material perspective, we didn't have much impact. Its only impact was from logistics and power and the diesel. I think that's what has contributed to the impact, and that's about 0.8% to 1% at the retail level.
Got it. Great, sir. Thank you so much for that detailed explanation. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Krishna Satodia from Motilal Oswal AMC. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi, good evening. My first question, while you alluded to it at the beginning, your operating cash flow conversion is about 35% for the first half, and the historical average has been about 70%. So would we reach to 70% by the end of the year as well, or is this year going to be a little different?
Yeah, so a couple of factors for that. One is that what we were discussing, that there were logistic challenges in the first half of this quarter, which kind of pushed down the sale to later months of this quarter. That's why receivable has got increased. There's no overdue or anything, but it's just that the timing of it. The other is the inventory, where we have been restocking, considering the planned launches we have, and as well as the new enoxaparin contract. So once that starts, inventory shipped to the customers, that is expected to go down. And by the end of the year, we expect that to come back to our normal operating level of working capital.
Got it.
And Sushmit, if you see now in a fast-growing company where you're growing at 30%, you also need to catch up with inventory, right? So when you're calculating the inventory days, it's based on the history, but you are gearing up for the next growth for the next quarter. So your inventory is always 30% higher than the previous. So that's a delta, and that's the problem with the growing companies, right?
Yeah, absolutely. The second question is, what would be the risk of the Sputnik contract not getting fulfilled? What are the risks that one should be mindful of?
At least, even if you supply 20 million vials or, 15 million vials, we get all the investments what we made. And the infrastructure and the materials what we bought. So that way, I won't see a big risk, and that's one. Second, the whole idea of getting into this is working towards the biosimilar CDMO space. So the plant is there, and we are creating the infrastructures, keeping in mind the long-term growth in this space. So this is more getting into the space, and we took this opportunity so that we fasten our entry into that. What we wanted to do with 2 years down the line, we did it now because we had an opportunity to encash when the vaccine opportunity came. So I don't see that as the loss for us. It's an investment we made. Looking towards long-term growth. Second, learning what we get from doing the technology transfer happening for the vaccine project and creating a team who has these capabilities and experience we're getting from it. And second is from the investment point of view, specifically for this project, is very limited, I would say. And, we are confident that, whenever it starts, even if you do half of what we have signed up for, will be very well off.
And just to, on this point, there is no take-or-pay penalty on RFID, right?
No, there's no penalty.
There's no penalty on them. Okay. Thank you so much, and all the best. Thank you.
Thank you.
The next question is from the line of Gagan Thareja from ASK Investment Managers. Please go ahead.
Yeah. Am I audible?
Yes.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, good evening. Sir, the first question is around your U.S. Business. You have 244 approved. And could you first clarify as to whether all of these are in the market? Have you commercialized all of these, or to what proportion have these been commercialized?
If you actually break it down into molecules, that's easier to study this, right? Out of 244 NDAs, I think the total molecules, if you see, there are about 153, right? And we have launched about 106. And there are tentatively approved products about 11. And what we have not launched was approved, which will happen in next quarter, is around 14 products. And there are also some tech transfer projects. And there are, so I would say out of this, what are launched, out of 153 molecules, 106, and they are tentatively approved about 11. So 170 have gone there, and then there are a few more products we have to launch in next few quarters.
Okay, and 47 pending approvals would in molecule terms also be equivalent to 47 or a different figure?
From the molecule level, it's around 22 molecules.
22. Right. So, I mean, you know, for a layman like me, if I do a very simplistic sort of an exercise, 47 pending on a base of 244, although you already clarified that you know, there are some TAs in pending numbers, if one were to assume that the revenue potential, you know, is somewhat better given that there might be complex filing there, it could still you know, look like the pending ANDA is around 20% of the base of approved ANDAs. While it might be wrong on my part to look at it in such a simplistic format, could you give some idea as to, you know, what sort of growth potential these 47 pending ANDAs could give you for the next 3 years, maybe? I presume your approval cycle is 3 years.
So the filed and approved products, if you see the market size, is about $4 billion. And what we have approved already is around $11 billion. So that should give you an idea. So $11 billion is approved products, and around $4 billion is filed and waiting for approved products.
Okay. And would it also be reasonable to assume that, you know, these products have, from a competitive standpoint, because they are relatively more complex, market formation would be more in your favor, and revenue potential for ANDA could be better?
Yeah, so if you see around $11 billion what we have approved, you know, out of which about $3.5 billion is still tentatively approved and not even launched, so waiting for either the product is settled and have a particular product launch date, or, you know, waiting for the patent expiry.
Okay.
So I can't really comment on, you know, how difficult are these and how many players will be there, because, you know, like someone was saying, so many players are coming into the space, so I can't really tell who has filed what. But again, these products, you know, we have a breadth of portfolio and we've been in this for long, so hopefully, you know, we should continue the growth and margins what we're showing now.
So the right way to look at it is that actually you've commercialized $7.5 billion worth of total addressable market, and you have another 7.5, that is 4 plus 3.5, left to commercialize, right? Am I correct in that, Salai? And this could happen over what time frame?
Probably 3 to 4 years, probably.
Okay, 3 to 4 years. Right. All right. And
if you see the approval timelines, you know, currently it's faster. If you see a year ago, look at our pending list, it was very high. And we're getting many product approvals in 9 months to 1 year. As we speak, we got one yesterday. So it could be faster also, because now we are doing a catch-up to file those products. And that's where our efforts are gone. When you're saying you've created this additional R&D center and creating additional team is to even catch up with the approval speed with which FDA is giving now. So historically, we've been looking at 20 to 24 filings. Now we are seeing how to increase this, you know, 40-50%, so that we get more approvals in a quicker time.
Okay. Okay. And secondly, on the ROW business, is the receivables and inventory profile similar to your regulated or U.S. market or is it very different? And if it is, so could you give some idea to what extent?
So the receivable time is little longer than the U.S. I think it's around 120 days.
It's around 120, yeah.
120 days.
60 to 80 of
US. Compared to 60 to 80 of the regulated market. But in terms of payment receipts and all that, the companies whom we are entering the contracts are mostly, Mylan sales of our products in some countries, Fresenius sales in some countries. So we're looking at extending those relationships to other markets so that, you know, one is relationship with those companies will grow, other is the business is more standard than one offspring. And the second is, of course, we're getting into contracts with the companies who are leaders in those markets, because not every product can be sold to everyone. So we're not trying to sell all the generic products. We're looking at the margin. And some are like, most of the countries have a retail market and where their prescription also helps. So we're entering contracts with those companies with a solid financial background.
And the fixed asset turnover, which you indicated, is now at 3.6 for you. What could be the peak that you could see on your current gross block for that?
So this will further increase when we start commissioning the existing additional lines which we are putting up in Pashminaram. Mm-hmm. There is Harman suspension line which is coming up, and there are lyos also which is currently being installed. And there is also PFS line which is coming up. So all put together, I think in next year it should go up further as we utilize further in this capacity.
Any ballpark number to understand your utilization levels currently?
Utilization, it all depends on which line and which product we're doing, right? So if you look at our pre-filled syringes, it's only around 50-60% fast utilization. If you look at our, some of our vials is almost running at 85-90%, but we also have just added new liquid lines. So overall, I would say around 60-65% capacity utilization. So we still have enough capacity to grow for the next couple of years.
Right. If one were to look out 5 years from now, you've given a fair bit of idea of how the U.S. market will evolve and how the ROW will evolve. If you could give some idea of your aspirations around biologics and China, both China from your filings and also possibilities from the Fosun Group, for us to get some understanding of the prospective size of that opportunity in a 5-year time frame.
You mean the China market?
Yeah, China plus biosimilars, both.
Biosimilars, see, we're not developing products, and unlike companies who are working on development of products and marketing, they're only dealing on the CDMO side. So it's too early to comment on how large that business will be. But there's almost like the market size is around $30-40 billion. The biosimilar CDMO.
Okay.
Sorry, $12-13 billion is a CDMO biosimilar business opportunity. So that's where we are entering in. We are not into developing products and licensing those products yet. So we want to work with companies who are looking at leveraging our substance and fill-finished capabilities. But from the China angle, I think we are coming out, continuously coming with a portfolio, and the target is in 4 to 5 years, we want to have at least 10% of our revenue coming from that market.
Right. In China, the business economics would be quite comparable to what you currently have?
The selection of products is that way. We are looking at company products which are completely innovative kind of products in those markets, not the normal products. So the selection is happening like that, and the margin profile is far better than any other market.
Okay. And the biosimilars capacity you indicated is around 60 kiloliters. I understand, everything is down to product selection and and your contracts on CDMO, but could you give us some sort of a very baseline understanding of what that translates into from a possible revenue potential? I'm not asking for a fixed number, but maybe a band, within which we could understand at optimal utilization, what sort of potential that 60 kiloliter capacity has.
Again, it's very difficult to tell. It all depends on which customer, which product, and how much utilization they take. It's completely any number I say is not real. So why say a number?
So if I flip the question and say if you could give me the idea of what's the investment that's gone in, and what sort of is a fixed asset turn on that investment going to be very different from what you have, or materially different, or comparable to what you have?
So I can answer in this way that the investment which we are making in this biosimilar CDMO with ourselves as well as with the granting partner, but that would ensure that we look at an IRR of at least 20%, and that's how we make any investment plan.
I'll
let these answers once we go further down this journey. Thank you. I would request Mr. Sareta to rejoin the queue for follow-up questions. We would also request participants to limit your questions to 2 at a time. The next question is from the line of Sai Mukherjee from Nomura. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for taking my question. First, you mentioned about ROW markets going to around 40% over a period of time. Can you give some color as to what would drive it? I mean, how much would there be from new markets like China, and how much would be from your existing markets? And the second question is if you can also share, the contribution from new launches in the first half of this fiscal year.
Yeah, so China, we're looking at 10% of the revenue contribution in coming years, and then the rest 30% from the other markets. To give a breakup. That's what we're looking at. Mm. And in terms of contribution of launches, it's around
9%. 9% of your H1.
7% of the revenue came from new launches in the first half.
Okay. So just one more question. You mentioned 8 to 10% is the profit share. Is it the same number for this half? The first half also? And is there any concentration risk there, half of the profit share coming from one product or something like that, if you want to call that out?
No, so it's spread across different products. It's not one or two products, different customers and different products. And it's around, percentage-wise, this quarter is around
8%. 8%, okay. And sir, how much is the total investments we have made on the vaccine biosimilar so far? If you can just share that number.
Yeah, so far the plan is to invest 300 crores, and we have made up to now about 230 crores. Balance is up to September. Balance is being made in this month.
Okay. Thank you, sir. I'll just stand there.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Vishal Mansanda from Nirmal Bang Institutional Equities. Please go ahead.
Thanks for the opportunity. With respect to the complex injectable filings that you intend to do for hormonal products and a complex peptide, could you share whether these products are patent expired and whether, and if yes, if there is existing players which have approvals for the same products?
You're referring to the 4 products you're filing?
Yes, sir. The 3 hormonal products and 1 complex peptide, which cumulatively represents a market of $983 million.
Yeah, so I think 1 product is on the patent, and the 3 products are open. And the 2 products they have, I think, one generic.
Pardon, sir? The 3 products?
No, the 3 products, 2 have... genocide, so I think 1 player is there for these 2 products.
Got it. Thank you. That's all.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, due to time constraints, that was the last question for today. On behalf of Glen Pharma, that concludes this conference. Thank you for joining us, and you may now disconnect your line.